And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
And the other fatal flaw is, why wasn't it completely in making the closing? You make the opening, you make the
closing. Honestly, Phil Farmer, I think probably would have done
the job. Yeah, but listen. Law School 101, day two, is you make the opening, you make the closing. You're making promises to the jury. And in the end, even if it's all just a babble of bullshit, you tell the jury that you succeeded with the promises you made them. It's a matter of trust with the jury. Instead, Dick says, we've made such a horrible mess of this trial, I can't remember what we did, so I'd like to, he actually said, can we divide up the closing argument? Newman said no. What more embarrassing thing could a defense attorney say than, we have made such a stinky mess of this entire defense, even I can't figure out what the hell we said. And then Jim launches into Scottish football. Yeah, again, ineffective assistance of counsel. Definitely, that seems like there would be grounds for appeal for that. I don't think that Alec is ever going to do that. I think he has great affection for Jim and Dick, and I do too. I think they're very nice people. But I think this is a how-to of, just like, Marsha Clark and what was the other guy's name? Darden or whatever. Just like other, high-profile cases where the defense screws it up. I mean, the prosecution screws it up. In O.J.'s trial, in this trial, the defense screwed it up. I mean, the prosecution, there's no explanation, but the defense was abysmal, absolutely abysmal.
Yeah. So, and then you go to Buster, his son, right? And he went into that Fox Nation interview with Martha McCallum and said, do you think, your father killed your mother and your brother? And he's like, no, not at all. And his theory was a two-shooter theory. Now, granted, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, it's his son, that's what he's going to say. But put a pin in Buster for a second, because we're going to talk about him in a little bit. But we go to a defense witness who I talked about in an earlier show, Ronnie Palmbeck, who was a the state of Wisconsin is just, they do it right. And the Wisconsin State Crime Laboratory was run by him, Ronnie Palmbeck. And, I think he was a very critical figure in advancing the two-shooter theory. And he testified for the defense, arguing based on the evidence, such as, gunshot angles, right? We talked about that. And the use of two firearms. Thomas Hayden talked about that as well in my interview with him. And we've talked about the chaotic nature of the crime scene, how long it takes to do this and do that and get there at the time, all these things. That it was highly improbable for one person to have committed both murders alone. And that is Palmbeck's expert opinion. And I agree with him. And I agree with Thomas Haynes, who's had 30 years of this. So these guys do this. And they've reenacted multiple crime scenes. And I just find it implausible. And when we go back to what Myra said, get Murdaugh at any cost. That's what I think happened. They were going to get this guy. No matter what, stop listening to logic. Stop listening to the facts. Stop following the evidence and just go with your gut. He did it. He did it
because he stole money. Yeah, because he was he's a white-collar criminal. That's no question he is.
Because he was the cracker. He was the cracker. come on. He's the, what do you call it? He was a ruling class cracker, all right? The people that were on the jury were none of them were of the same social status as Alex Murdaugh. They were jealous of Alex Murdaugh. And then when they brought the financial crimes in, they totally demonized them. And I would love to see that jury actually substantiate why they thought Alex Murdaugh was guilty. We talk about political campaigns and we talk about, we got to talk about policy. We got to talk about this. We got to talk about that.
Right.
Yeah, I would love this brain trust of a jury, all right, to substantiate why they thought Alex Murdaugh was guilty based on the evidence. And this was never asked of them. And the jury foreman was the one that had the obligation to challenge the jury and what they thought and why they thought Alex was guilty. All right.
You mean the jury for a poor person who was Becky Hill's friend?
Yes.
She was supposed to do that? Okay.
Yep. Yeah, right. So I think I've made my point. All right. This was as much of a kangaroo court as you'll ever see.
Right. So let's go back to who else said, this. And I look outside the trial and I look at somebody like Mark Garagos. Is that name familiar with you guys? He's a world-renowned attorney.
Of course, Mark Garagos. But didn't Mark Garagos, who did he represent? Scott Peterson? Did he represent
represented everybody from Michael Jackson to who are those two brothers that...
Menendez brothers. No. Stacey Abrams, whatever her name is, Abramson or whatever, represented.
You know who Mark Garagos is. Mark Garagos.
Yeah, we know who he is. Go. Yeah.
Yeah. He was on Chris Cuomo's show, and he provided this legal analysis, right? And Garagos, he discussed the plausibility of the two-shooter theory. And, he indicated, well, it was a bold defense strategy, and I agree with him, that it had enough merit to introduce reasonable doubt, and that's what we're going back to. Is it two-shooter theory, including SLED agents, including the star witness for the prosecution, Dr. Kenny Kinsey, cannot rule out a two-shooter theory. And what that does, according to Mark Garagos, and I agree with him, that it garners enough merit for reasonable doubt, and that's why my book is called Defending Alex Murdoch, Not Guilty by Reasonable Doubt. I don't say Alex Murdoch is innocent. I don't say he didn't do it. Oh, maybe I just say he didn't do it. But it's reasonable doubt, folks. It's a ton of reasonable doubt. So Garagos said it. And then there's another one, Sarah Azari. Am I pronouncing that correctly? You know who Sarah is?
She's a podcaster, yes.
If you were gonna put Alex's trial to music, what song would you use?
Ooh.
Oh, I mean, listen, come on. I think it's kind of obvious.
Can't trust your soul.
No, feelings. Feelings.
Nothing more than feelings.
Greg, of all the songs you would come up with, that wasn't one. I don't know. I can't quite see how to choreograph this. Here's the deal. Mark Garagos reminds me of Jerry Spence. I mean, Jerry Spence was more successful than Mark, but that's that kind of bluster and that kind of... So I'm going to take what he says and stick it in the pile of who cares. The Azari woman is a partner of Jim Griffin in a podcast, Sarah Azari, and because she and I have communicated back and forth a little bit on... some DMs on Facebook. I'm sorry, but she and Jim and people on court, I hate to say this, but Jim and Dick didn't seem any really more well-informed about what was going on in the trial than all of these legal experts. So
they just need to get my book, and that's a problem. I'm out of wind. You want to win, Jim Griffin and Dick Harpooly, and you hire me, and I'll explain my book to you.
I like him. Sympathy
for the Devil, Rolling Stones, there's my song.
Oh, hate you for that. I don't know.
I'm gonna
pass on that. We get the government we deserve, you know.
We get the government we deserve. Yes.
Oh, there's another one that's called Hurt by Johnny Cash. It's the cover of a Nine Inch Nails song. Look it up. Hurt. So Sarah Azari, she's, obviously we said she's another legal analyst. She's a podcaster with Jim Griffin, but, so clearly she's going to have a little bit of bias. I get that. But she's speaking from an attorney's point of view.
Yes.
And she pointed out the defense's attempt, obviously, to poke the hole in the prosecution timeline. Her point was, the theory was plausible, but it's ultimately up to the jury to decide whether the defense, excuse me, not the defense, the evidence was strong enough to support it. Mm-hmm. and then highlighting how, you know, introducing the plausibility to two shooters just added another layer of, you know, complexity to the whole case.
Actually, I thought that Jim was going to move for a directed verdict right there, or Dick was, when Melinda Worley said, yeah, it's possible that there are two shooters. That's reasonable doubt. We can end this thing right now, you know. And I moved for a directed verdict. But Newman, I think he actually did, now that I think of it. And Newman, you know, overruled it. But to me, you have reasonable doubt right there when their own prosecution expert says that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that financial crimes took the trial in a way. It is the very definition of why that kind of evidence is so prejudicial, because it had nothing to do with who killed Paul and Maggie at all. That connection was so tenuous to be non-existent, really.
And you know,
Richie Seaton Tucker's father talked about that too. That wasn't motivation. No hearing where he would be ordered to do a thing like produce financial records would be such a threat to an attorney that they would have to go home and kill their wife and their son. I mean, it just, you know, he could have dragged that out forever.
Oh.
Murdaugh himself, you know, when he took the stand, which we all thought that was stupid. In retrospect, it was.
Yeah, but listen, we can't watch his body language and don't believe him. You know, don't believe him.
I thought he did, other than the fact that he had to keep saying, this is what you look like when you lie. Although, I'd love to have Mark Tisley on the stand and somebody yelling at him going, and Mark, this is what it looks like when you're lying. And this is what, and I'd love to have Eric Bland on the stand saying, this is what it looks like when you're manipulating the facts. This is what it looks like when you're colluding to obstruct justice. This is what it looks like when you and your buddies are doxing people, which, by the way, is a federal crime. And, you know, so none of us are going to look good. Even, you know, your mom cross-examining you on the stand is going to say, you know, Jim, this is what you'll look like when you lied to me about whether you took the cookie from the cookie jar. So there was no way Alec was going to win that. I thought he handled that extremely well. I think he, at that point in the trial, was saying, this is an enormous dark, big black hole that I'm sucked into now. And I think he just thought he had no chance. Do you think he'll testify at the next trial? I don't think so either.
I doubt it.
But on the stand, he implied, Alex did, enemies of the family possibly connected to the boat wreck incident could have had a motive to target Paul. Suggesting obviously
he said that the night of the murder, even in his drug-induced whatever that was, stupidity or fog or whatever, he said it then. He immediately said it then. He didn't concoct it later. In the moment, he said, I think this could be connected to... But, you know, when we talk about who all was connected to those boat brats, they all know each other. They all, you know, those kids in that area went to high school, they went to grade, you know, they went to school together. And that means, all along. I imagine most kids in a certain age bracket knew each other. Whether they were, I'm not just talking about the kids, you know, the boat brats that were on the boat, but their buddies, their friends, their ex-girlfriends, ex-boyfriends, ex-whatever. They knew each other. I think that a lot of them had a motive related to, there was so much anger about Paul, and Paul he didn't live long enough to tell his side of who was driving the boat. He denied it, and we just assumed that he was lying when he denied it. But we never got a chance. We never heard a word from him. He never testified. We never heard his voice at all. And I think that Maggie was, I think he had sort of, at one point, sort of agreed to take the blame. And I think that Maggie was saying, no, you're not taking the blame for those brats. We're going to, you know, Connor was driving the boat, or whatever. There's a different story there than the one that they were spreading about Paul. But that story that they spread about Paul attributed to so much hatred toward Paul. It was reckless, it was irresponsible, it was exaggerated, it was factually inaccurate. It was all kinds of things that just whipped up a frenzy of hatred for Paul, so that there's yet another whole group of people who think that they're defending Mallory by killing Paul and Maggie. You know, when you spread that kind of hatred, you can bring all kinds of crazies out from the woodwork, you know, out from under a rock, that say, you know, I'll take action. It's like the guy that made the second attempt on Donald Trump. you know, he's motivated by rhetoric. And so there was all kinds of rhetoric about what an evil black hole was. And he couldn't answer. He didn't answer.
And that same rhetoric applies to Alex, you know? Really.
Right. Well, let's jump back to Buster. So here's what's interesting. 3 days after the murders, so it was on the 7th, on the 10th, okay? So June 10th, 2021, 3 days later, SLED questioned in camera, questioned Buster Murdoch. You guys ever see the interview? If you haven't,
never,
it's on YouTube.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I suggest you do. It's about an hour. It's not very long. In that interview, towards the end of the interview, the SLED agent, and there was a couple in the car, and I think Buster had an attorney in the back seat as well. And the SLED agent goes, well, listen, I need to talk to you about something. If I didn't ask this, you know, I wouldn't be doing my job. You know when they say that? Bad questions are coming.
Yes, you do.
And he goes, I want to talk to you about the Smith boy. Do you know what I'm talking about? And Buster's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And what they're referring to is the mysterious death of Stephen Smith, 19-year-old boy who was allegedly murdered in Hampton County back in July 2015. And, of course, that was very suspicious circumstances of his death. But this questioning from SLED to Buster Murdoch sparked a ton of rumors about the possible connection between Buster and Stephen's death, which has been debunked over and over again. So there is no connection between Buster and Stephen. And I have even myself investigated and have found nothing. I can't find anything. But some speculated that, you know, SLED's inquiry into Buster so soon after the murders, what, could hint at a broader undisclosed motives or connections. It just really remained speculative, and the timing of it, you know, the intrigue and the complexity surrounding all this case, it just didn't make any sense to me. But what I questioned it, could SLED have been trying to see, this is a question, could SLED have been trying to see if the real killers of Stephen Smith may have also killed Paul Murdoch and his mother Maggie? That's the question I ask.
Yes, short answer, yes.
If you watch the interview, it really seems like that's what they're pushing for, but he never really asked the question. He was asking every other question except
that. Was that Owen? Who was asking that, Owen?
No, it wasn't Owen. It was somebody else.
All right, now, here's the next question.
Jim Griffin in the car. Just a minute.
Go ahead.
Was Jim Griffin representing Buster and in the car at the time?
I don't believe so. I think it was one of the PMPED attorneys.
So here's the thing that's true. The PMPE attorneys have no clue what was going on whatsoever, and they stunk at defending their witnesses.
But I
understand what it is to defend a deposition, to defend a witness. They stunk at it. Trust me, you're going to look back and say, you know, Elaine, you were right. And I think Jim Griffin was in the car with Alec Murdoch, you know, in the very early morning, you know, like 1 o'clock in the morning on June 8th.
No. That was not Jim Griffin. That was a PMPED attorney. Jim Griffin was in the car.
What was the other guy? What was the other guy? What was his name? He was Ronnie Crosby. Who was it?
Yeah, it wasn't Ronnie Crosby. It's the guy with the beard.
Hernandez?
Heavy set.
Danny Hernandez?
Maybe. I can't think about
that. What is that? Is that all they do down here is interview people in cars? I mean, you know, Alex was interviewed in a car. But I thought all they did down here was make babies in the car.
That's never happened. Ask what's your good friend, you know, who has the child.
Frank with the joke. Take my wife, please.
Yeah, no. Okay, Jim, you know what I'm talking about. The Stephen Smith sister who has the child with... I'm trying not to say it. Let's not mention it because the child is older than maybe years. It's alleged, yes. Credibly alleged. Okay, so, yeah, I thought it was weird that they're using a car, but then I thought, well, maybe that doesn't make any sense because if you're concerned about COVID and you jam everybody in a car, you're sure to spread it. So I don't get what that was about. Okay, but anyway, so go back to this. I think I've heard part of this thing with Buster, but you know, when you're looking for something, I remember I was looking for something else, and there was some other part of it that caught my attention. So I'm going to go back and watch it again, because I think you're right. I think that there had to be people in law enforcement that understood there was, or were concerned that there was a connection, and that's always been, it got spun. The you know, after the Magnum Pollock kill, that got spun into to implying that the connection was that Buster was involved, instead of that the killers of both Stephen and Paul and Maggie are the same person, which is something that would just blow.
Well, and listen,
out of the water. I mean,
you know, the three of us talk about things that we don't normally broadcast, and I'm concerned. I don't want to pee in anybody's Cheerios, but there's a at some point in time, and now is probably not the time because, you know, other folks have, you know, some of you folks have irons in the fire, but we should talk about the Stephen Smith murder and the Paul and Maggie murder and the possible connections they could have had and the common players that could have been involved.
On the phone,
at this minute, is a gentleman that knows a great deal about that, more than
I know that, and for his privacy, I don't want to get into it now.
Yes.
At a later date.
Grandparents, we could be his grandparents or his parents. Let's call them our parents. We're concerned about, among other things, his health and well-being.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah. Plus, that needs to be monetized. All right.
100%. I agree.
You know, and we're looking. We got about 4 minutes to go.
Really?
Yeah. Boy, time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
We're spitballing.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've really determined that the possibility of two shooters was a real possibility and a more likely. Can we agree on that? A more likely scenario.
Yes.
Than the difficulty of one person manipulating two non-existent firearms. All right. You know, that's just.
Well, can I just go through real quick?
Go ahead.
In my book, Defendant Alec Murdoch, Not Guilty by Reasonable Doubt. I talk about this explicitly, and I break it down. So here it is. Shooting a target, Paul, 2 to 3 seconds. Putting the gun down, the 12-gauge, and picking up another gun to 300 blackout, 2 to 3 seconds. Running 30 feet at an angle of 41 degrees, 5 to 7 seconds. Shooting another moving target, 2 to 3 seconds. Total time, 12 to 15 seconds. Maggie is already at the spot where she died within, what do we say, 6 seconds? 8 seconds.
6 seconds. You said six seconds. You bumped it up to eight, just to be generous.
So, and Myra says it in her book, Because Enough is Enough, is that sometimes it's not what the prosecution tells you, it's what the prosecution doesn't tell you. And neither, by the way, did the defense go through the timing of what I did. And we laugh at saying Jim Griffin and Dick Harpootlian need to hire me, because I can prove reasonable doubt with just that. You don't need to put me on the stand. I'll bring an expert in. I'll show you exactly how it's done and how it can't be done. It's impossible. Yes. I don't care if you're the Flash from, you know, the movies. You can't do it. It's just impossible.
I think
that's the song. It's impossible.
Can we all agree on that pretty much?
100%.
I'm convinced that there were two shooters, and I've said that early on. Now, the identity of the shooters has changed in my mind, all right?
Yeah.
And that's based on Jim's research, and that's all well and good. And
also, Frank, there are possibilities. There are some very good theories. Let the jury, let the prosecution do its job and hone in on, but do your job this time and look for,
it might be,
we're not committed to he's innocent. We're committed to do your job.
Well, hey, listen, people have a tendency to follow the path of least resistance, and the path of least resistance was the prosecution of Alex Murdoch. All right?
Yeah.
And compounded by the fact that there was no love lost between him and the prosecution, All right.
Apparently not.
The political aspect of him in the prosecution. He was not really loved, you know, or
not at all.
So
that's why this trial is going to get moved to Greenville.
Yeah. Yep. It needs to for sure. So,
yeah.
Well, guys,
our outro music needs to be Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, all right. Sympathy for the Devil works. but I don't know if that would. Nah, that didn't apply, Jim. You know why? They had no sympathy for that poor guy. Hey, we beat it up for an hour. Let's call it quits. Where do we want to go next week?
Fortunate Son by CCR.
Yeah. No. Listen, I think maybe we should all do.
Put some thought into it.
Listen.
Because by next week we might have some. Something back from the court, one way or another. That'd be nice,
and then we can all do gummies and listen to In the God of the Vida.
Whatever it's going to be, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be on 97.7 FM.
Yeah, and Jimmy, you, good for you. This is WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Cottageville, South Carolina. And, folks, I thank you very much, and we're out of here. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's all the time we have for now on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We hope you've enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the Murdaugh murder trial so far. Don't worry, we'll be back soon to dive even deeper into the case and bring you more chilling stories from the Lowcountry region. We thank you for listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, the Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.